Lights, camera, action.
And the winner is...
Welcome back to the Oscar Real Movie Podcast, where we discuss and review past, present, and potentially future Oscar-related movies. I am your host, Matthew Schmidt, and I have been watching Oscar-related movies since I can remember. I remember walking through Blockbuster and just looking for those little statuettes in all the movies and watching them as many as I could. And I am joined by my co-host and lovely wife, Haley, who has gotten into movies since marrying me, go figure, and has really gotten into the award season and brings a fresh set of eyes to Oscar-related movies. And today, we continue our Best Picture nominee reviews for the 2021 movies, 2022 ceremony. Today, we have more family-oriented nominees. We've got Coda, which is about a deaf family, or more specifically, a child of deaf adults, hence the title, trying to follow her dreams. It's streaming on Apple Plus. It's an Apple Plus original. And also, we have the extremely personal story of an Irish family in the late 60s in Kenneth Branagh's Belfast. As far as the Oscar goes, I'd say Coda is one of the favorites, if not the favorite, for Best Supporting Actor, with Troy Kotsur, the other being Cody Smith from McPhee from Power of the Dog in our last review. Those are probably the two front runners. Maybe Troy's got the edge. And then Belfast, I would say, has a shot at winning original screenplay, which I kind of hope it does for Kenneth Branagh, because this movie obviously means a lot to him. Both are heartwarming and worth a watch. So if you've seen them, listen in, see if you agree with our takes. If you haven't, you just want to know what these Best Picture nominees are all about, then you're in the right place. So sit back and let's get on with the reviews.
Okay, let's start talking about the next Best Picture nominee, Coda, which you can find on Apple Plus. I love the title of this movie, about a girl who is a child of deaf adults, Coda, that's what that stands for. But it's also about her like love of music, and Coda is a musical notation.
So. Which I either didn't know or forgot, because I was in band in high school.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's something I should know.
You should know.
But been a while. And two, I feel like Coda being like a musical term is not brought up at all in any reviews that I've seen about this. Everyone brings up the children of deaf adults. And I think that's like the bigger point of the movie
Seeing
like that family or lifestyle, whatever you want to think of it. But yeah, dual meaning. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Yeah, I like that. We've got the director is Sean Hader. Looking at some other stuff that she did, she also wrote the adapted screenplay for this. It's based on a 2014 French movie, pretty much the same plot. She's also done some writing for Orange is the New Black, which is cool. Acting, not a lot of names you might know. The main character, Ruby, is played by Amelia Jones. Her mother is played by Marley Matlin. She's probably...
That's an Oscar winner.
That's the big one. Yep, exactly. Her father, Frank, is played by Troy Kotsur. Her brother, Leo, is played by Daniel Durant. And then her music teacher is played by Eugenio Derbez. Budget for this movie. Do you have a ballpark guess?
I know what it is. Okay. So yes, I have a very specific ballpark guess on what it is.
Right on that third baseline. You're right there.
I know. Yeah. $10 million.
$10 million. Yeah. How about that?
So yeah, small. It was at Sundance. I know that. And that's where Apple bought it. So Sundance, indie movie, usually going to be small budget. Probably why you haven't heard of anyone other than maybe Marley Matlin, who, watching West Wing, she's also in that.
She is.
And Troy Kotsur's been around for a while as kind of like a... Like, he's in shows, like in TV shows and stuff, probably when they
you know, like one episode of Law and Order, two episodes of Jake. I don't know. I don't know that for sure. I'm just naming off.
Yeah, no. How about this? So he and Marley Madden actually played a couple in an episode of, like, it was one of the CSI franchises.
I think.
I don't remember which one. But yeah, you're right.
CSI New York. Yeah, they played a married couple.
A few pieces here and there. But yeah, I think the most notable thing about like the cast is that the three adults, like Ruby's brother, mother and father, all the actors are deaf in real life too,
which is different than the French movie, because like the two leads were not deaf, so it had some criticism,
understandably so.
Yep, especially when it was made in like 2014.
Yeah,
like it should, you know, criticize at all times, but you know, back in the 50s and 60s they were,
you gotta look at it through a different lens. Yeah. But this was just a few years ago.
Yep.
So $10 million budget, very limited theater release, so box office. I am seeing that's pulled in just over $1 million. We want to talk about awards.
Yep.
Season nominations. If we look at the Golden Globes, they were nominated for Best Picture Drama and then Supporting Actor for the Dad, Troy Kotsur. No wins at the Globes, but the SAGs, which just happened recently, they won Outstanding Cast, which is kind of like their version of Best Picture in a sense. And then Troy Kotsur won Supporting Actor, which was very cool to see.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that has him, like, that's bringing in a lot of momentum, as they say, into the Academy Awards, because I think it'd been assumed that Cody Smith McPhee was going to win for The Power of the Dog, but now Troy has won the SAG and the BAFTAs, or soon, or they happened? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think they're maybe coming up middle of March, I want to say.
Yeah, so that might have something. Last year, Anthony Hopkins won the BAFTA, and people say like that's the reason he won the Oscar over Chadwick Boseman. So who knows? But yeah, him winning the SAG is a big deal. And then yeah, like it won Cast, which is their version of Best Picture. I don't know. Maybe I'm just mistaken. I don't usually take a lot of, I don't look at that too closely because it's like a Best Cast.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean Best Picture. I've heard people say that though, like, oh, that's their version of Best Picture. This is a big deal. I've never viewed it as a big deal. There's been a few Best Picture winners that just aren't even nominated for Best Cast at the SAGs. Like Nomadland, I should check, but I don't even think Nomadland was nominated for like Best Cast, because it's like it's literally one person.
Right, exactly.
So why would it be? But of course it won and was probably going to win Best Picture going into that. Mm-hmm. So but yeah. And then yeah, sorry, go on.
So then looking at the Oscars, Academy Awards, obviously ceremony hasn't happened yet, so we don't have any winners, but their nominations are Best Picture, Supporting Actor, and then Adapted Screenplay, which I mentioned, Sean Hader wrote this, as well as directed.
Mm-hmm. Which I would say, like, those are all big deal nominations for a movie like this. Small-time movie, like, yeah, it's Apple Plus, it's got a big name behind the distribution, but small-time movie, I don't expect it to win Best Picture or Screenplay, maybe with him winning the SAG, and if he wins the BAFTA, Troy might win Best Supporting Actor, which would be phenomenal. He'd be the first deaf person to win an Oscar since Marley Matlin did it in 1987 for Children of Lesser God. But, I mean, three isn't a lot, which, you know, unfortunately for the Oscars, usually there's telltale signs on who's going to win Best Picture. It's going to be one that has a decent amount of nominees. Usually it's going to be nominated for Best Director as well, so I'm not seeing like a Best Picture win for this or anything, which is why like I'm not reading too much in the SAG win. Mm-hmm. There
for sure,
but it is a great cast, so it deserves the SAG.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Do you want to talk through ratings?
Yeah, so as it stands right now at the time of recording, the Rotten Tomatoes score is certified 95% by critics and 93% for the audience, so very well received. The critic consensus is Coda's story offers few surprises, so not a lot, but strong representation and a terrific cast led by Emilia Jones. Brilliant performance, that's who plays the daughter, brings this coming-of-age story vividly to life. So that's Rotten Tomatoes. IMDb is currently an 8.1, which I think as of now is tied for the highest score on IMDb out of the Best Picture nominees with Dune. So good score there. And then the Metacritic score is a 74. So like on the higher side, not crazy high, but definitely a good score. I had some trivia here. We talked about some of it already, like Troy and Marley being in CSI New York.
Yeah.
So Emilia Jones, again, who plays the daughter, spent 9 months learning sign language and learning how to work a fishing trolley, because the family in this movie were like, they fish, they're fishermen. That's how they make their living.
Mm-hmm.
They actually shot those fishing scenes like authentically. So they actually, they needed like a hearing person on board. And one day they had an actual advisor on board, which is a plot point of the movie. So yeah, like that actually did happen to them while filming. You mentioned based on French film, which saw criticism or controversy because the two leads were hearing. And then, yeah, I mentioned this was bought at Sundance by Apple. It was, they paid $25 million for distribution rights, which I, at the time might have been a record.
Yeah.
Which at the time, that was earlier this year, so it's probably a record still.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Or last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then also I just had a quick reaction from the deaf community, because obviously this is about like a demographic that isn't represented too often or maybe well in film. Mm-hmm. So of course, when something like this comes out, there's going to be reactions to it.
Right. And, you know, to kind of fit in with some of the other like trivia pieces too, 40% of the script is in sign language.
Yeah.
So decent amount. So
yeah, no, that was, I mean, no, it's a good point. So it was met with varying reactions. The general bullet points that I saw was it was nice to see that people of deaf communities were happy to see that they're represented as self-sufficient, because they're often viewed as helpless in books or movies. So like they fished on their own. Like they were able to make a living. They're self-sufficient. So that was on the positive side of things. They liked seeing, so there's a point in the movie where the mom and dad get caught having sex while the daughter has like
a friend
who she has a crush on over. So the people like seeing them as like sexual beings, because they're often viewed like neutered in media.
Mm-hmm.
One critic didn't like the idea of a deaf family not being supportive of a singing daughter. So just like, They weren't supportive of their child. So I think that's more of just a family dynamic more than anything. But
yeah, I know, kind of elaborating on a criticism there, I had seen one opinion from someone was like, for the parents to not have any comprehension of how people could possibly like appreciate music, like when they're sitting at the concert, I think that was one like, okay, like deaf people understand that other people enjoy music.
Yeah. And I feel like that's more on the Marley Matlin's character, because the first time you see the dad, not the first time you see him, but when he picks her up from school, he's got like the music blaring in the car. So like he has an appreciation for music. So it's more on the Marley Matlin's character side of things, probably. And then the last note I had here was there was some criticism over in the movie having the daughter being the main interpreter for the family. And seeing her be the interpreter in situations where a professional one is like required by law, almost by the Americans with Disabilities Act. So
interesting.
Like at one point in the movie, you know, they're doing like a news story on the family, and that's probably a situation where they would have a professional do it, not the daughter. But at the same time, it's like a small town.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like while they are self-sufficient, they're kind of on the poorer end of things. Like they go through financial problems in the movie. So I don't know, like I know zero things about having to hire an interpreter professionally, unprofessionally, whatever, but I find like it's convenient to just have your daughter do it. So I guess as the movie goes, I get it, but I guess legally like there is a criticism there.
Sure.
So
yeah, all valid responses.
Yeah, I mean, and also like part of it's like it's a movie, nothing's ever going to be perfect. Mm-hmm. It's like it's still a, from what I can tell, people saying it's like a decent, one of the better representations. And while there aren't a lot, there's not like a big pool to like pull examples from, but it's on the better end of representation. So
yes. Yeah.
All right. Let's get through some general non-spoilery Thoughts on the movie? I can go
yeah,
first.
Go ahead.
I thought it was a really good movie. Just up front, really good movie. Gave it an 8.9. It wasn't quite enough for me to get it in the 9. Like, 9s and higher, like, this is like an amazing movie. Mm-hmm. It wasn't quite enough for that, but it was a really enjoyable movie. It was fun to watch. It's a coming of age story, which I love. But at the same point, like, there's so many examples of a coming of age story that it's like kind of predictable. Like, you can guess what's going to happen throughout the movie, right? Like, oh, it's a girl who, you know, it's cliche in the sense of it's a girl who, she's the only hearing person in her family and she loves to sing. And they kind of poke fun at that in the movie. Like, Marley Matten's like, oh, if we were blind, would you, what does she say? Like,
would you want to be an artist?
Yeah. Like, you know, so they kind of poke fun at that being cliche, but so like, it's a story we've kind of seen before, but what I like about it is like, it's in a new wrapper in the sense of like, it's about a deaf family, things that we don't see that often. So like, that is what makes it great to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's not about the end. It's like the journey through the movie, even though I could guess or knew what the ending of the movie would be, like, the journey along the way was different. Like, I felt like I was seeing and experiencing new things. So I thought that was really good. The acting is really good in it. The dad, like, Troy, he's nominated for an Oscar. He deserves to be nominated. He's fantastic in this
movie. So good. I think that's probably my favorite part of the movie is that he's such a well-rounded character.
Yeah, like, he's the raunchy farts at the dinner table guy, but then we'll talk about it. He has touching moments with his daughter
too. Yeah, so I was going to say, he's in touch with his emotions, and he cares so deeply about his wife and his kids and his business and how he's portrayed in the community. Like, he's just a deeply caring person, and I think that that's a really refreshing character to see too.
Mm-hmm.
That a man who's that well-rounded and just appreciates like all those aspects of his life.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, the whole family is great. The brother is good. He's kind of got this relationship with his sister where he kind of like, he loves her, but he's like, you don't need to be here for us. Like, we can take care of ourselves. Like, he thinks that she does it to be like the hero. Like, why do you always got to be the hero? And she's like, I'm just doing it to help. Like, so like, the brother's like good, and he's trying to fit in with the community too, but you know, it's tough. So like, the whole family's great. The teacher, I was so worried I was going to get sick of the teacher, because he's introduced as this like kind of stereotypical cliche music teacher where he's like,
he's very dramatic, he's very over the top,
exactly, and he's like doing meditation and stuff like that. I was very worried I was gonna get sick of him, but it was really only like that in the beginning, and then he kind of became a normal person. So I ended up enjoying his performance for the most part too. The boyfriend is there, like, he's nothing special but nothing terrible either. So like, overall, the acting was very good in this.
So
it looks good. Like, it's set in Massachusetts. Like, it's nothing crazy. Like, there's no like artsy direction, like directing camera angles with it. It's pretty straightforward with that. It's more so driven by like, by seeing a different type of family than you do in families.
Yeah.
Yep. Or in movies.
Yeah. I guess maybe the two things that I would kind of elaborate for myself. So yeah, Ruby's crush, boyfriend, whoever, his name is Miles. He was like a nice kid and like a decent character, but I felt like the relationship was just not that realistic.
Yeah, like, that's why I was like, he's just there.
Yeah,
like, it's kind of whatever.
Yeah, like, there's a scene where he's like apologizing for something, and I'm just like, no dipshit 17-year-old kid is gonna behave like that. I appreciate what they're trying to do, but I'm like, really? And even like, some of the things that Ruby does, I'm just like, okay, like, she's supposedly like really uncertain about herself, but also like, you're a senior in high school and you don't know like how to sing. Like, it was just, there were some things that were like, didn't quite check out to me. So You gave your score already, yep. Right? So, yeah, for me, a little bit lower. I gave this an 8. I think the really good parts stand out, and the parts that are not so great just kind of bring it down a little.
It's a good, like, it's a movie I don't think anyone would hate.
Right.
So, like, if you're with your family, you want to put something on, like, it's good. It's streaming somewhere. It's easy to turn on and watch. Like, it, you know, you'll feel good at the end.
Yeah, everyone will find something enjoyable out of it. Like you mentioned, the dad's a little bit raunchy. Even the mom, too. Like, they're just both kind of silly people.
There's, like, one sex scene, but you don't see anything. Yeah. That's the one uncomfortable if you're watching it with your parents or something.
But, you know, like, you'll get some laughs out of it. There'll be moments that will definitely touch you. And, like, I think you'll just gain a different perspective on, you know, a family that might be different than yours, or someone who you might not come across in your day-to-day basis. So I always like that aspect of movies when they can show you something that you wouldn't necessarily see on your own street.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't spoil things. Name me one thing that I've actually spoiled.
Okay. So just, I mean, spoilers, it isn't, like I said, it's kind of predictable. You, watching the trailer, you can probably guess what's going to happen, but we'll just quick run through of the movie.
Yeah.
So it opens with Ruby. That's the girl, like, that's the daughter of the family who can hear, and the rest of her family can't. It opens with her helping out her father and brother on their fishing boat. And she does this, like, every morning before school. So she's just falling asleep, smells like fish in school all the time. Kind of gets made fun of for those reasons, but they also reveal, which I appreciate, when she first went to school, she couldn't, like, talk normally, which makes sense, and that's something I never would have thought of. And they bring that up, which I thought was interesting. So that's why she's kind of been made fun of.
Yeah, yeah. I think, was it the music teacher that kind of pulled it out of her? What happened? And she was like, I didn't talk like everyone else. I talked like a deaf person when I first came to school. So it sounds like she's had some things to overcome.
So then she is joining a club, sees that her crush joins choir. She joins choir, even though she secretly likes to sing. She sings at the beginning of the movie. So she joins choir. When she's called upon, kind of chickens out, runs away. And then you get introduced to the rest of her family, where they talk about how they're going through financial issues. They're not making enough money fishing because they use a middleman, like everyone does in town, where they sell it to, like, a distribution person who then resells it to end users, and they feel like they're getting screwed out of money. So while she's going to choir, the family decides that they're going to, like, start their own business. They're going to sell directly, and any other fishermen who want to join them can. So, like, they're becoming involved in the community. They're, like, you know, like, I don't want to say liked, but they're, like, they used to section themselves off from the community, but now they're, like, involved more, and they're enjoying, like, working with these people. But Ruby is always there as the interpreter.
Yeah.
Always there. And because of that, she's missing her, like, choir lessons and classes, because the teacher realizes that she's really good and is like, hey, like, you could get a scholarship to a school, like, I could help you out with lessons on the side. But, like, she's always missing those because she's always interpreting for her family. When she's talking to her mom, her mom's like, well, no, like, you're part of this family, like, who cares about singing, you know?
You don't need to go to college, like, we have our fishing business. Just what you'll do.
Like, these are all things that I feel like are kind of cliche, but, like, that, like I mentioned before, but it's still done pretty well. So yeah, she's interpreting, and then eventually she like decides she's gonna stay at home instead of going to college, but then at the last second decides to do a tryout for music. She starts dating her crush too, because they, you know, bond over all this stuff. And then her family,
he's auditioning at the same music school.
Yep. And her family comes to, like, watch her recital, like, not even the tryout, but, like, the recital. And that was a pretty cool scene because it mutes, right? Like, it's like you hear everyone getting ready to sing, blah, blah. And then it kind of gives you, like, their perspective, where, like, there's no sound and they're just looking around and they're, like, waiting for everyone to start clapping so they know when to clap. Like, it was like their way of telling how good Ruby is doing is by looking at the faces of other people.
Yeah.
And they see people, like, crying, smiling, like, crying in a good way, like, she did a really good job. And that's when, I think that's when the dad has, like, the really emotional scene. Like, when they get home, he takes her aside and is like, sing for me. And then he, this sounds creepy, but it was actually really beautiful. He like puts his hands on her neck so that he can like feel the vibrations. Mm-hmm. And it was, it was like one of the more touching scenes in the movie.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So after that happens, she decides to do the tryout. Her family rushes her to the tryout. She gets there at the last possible moment. She's up next, no chance to warm up. And then she does the tryout. And nails it, but what was really cool is, like, during it, her family sneaks in and sits in the upper deck, and she starts, like, signing the song while singing it. Mm-hmm. So she's, like, singing it to them.
Yeah.
So, and then she, you know, she, of course, she gets the scholarship.
She gets in.
The family, at one point, like, she doesn't show up for the boat, like, earlier in the movie, because she wants to spend time with her boyfriend. And that's, like, of course, the one time that an advisor has to be on their ship. The advisor realizes that these are a bunch of deaf people, so she kind of sets them up, like, makes a call to the Coast Guard who show up, realizes that, like, they can't hear in the case of an emergency and sights them, so they, like, can't, they can't work unless they have a hearing person on board. Like, that happens earlier in the movie, so that's, like, the big conflict that happens.
Yeah, because they're like, you know, Ruby, if you can't do it, then we need to hire someone, and we can't afford to hire someone. We would need to train them. And so, yeah, it's this kind of conflict. And that's when she's like, okay, fine. Like, I won't do it. I won't go to college. I'm not going to pursue, like, singing anymore. But this is actually one of my favorite scenes, is when the family just kind of blows up about all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when the brother, which you alluded to, this is when he's like, you don't have to save us. Like, we don't need you, you know?
I mean, they don't, but they do. They technically need a hearing person. So
yes,
it's tough.
Yes. But, you know, he was trying to be like, look, like, don't be the martyr. Don't be like, oh, like, I want to go to school, but, oh, you need me, so I'll put everything on hold for you guys. He's like, if that's what you want to do, then do it. Like, we can figure things out for ourselves. And I think that was a really, like, powerful scene.
Mm-hmm.
To see, like, everyone really expressing how they felt.
So. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think my favorite scene was probably, like, when she sings for her dad.
Yes. Like, that's the one image from this movie that I think will, like, stick with me. I did really like the scene with Ruby and her mom, and they're talking more about, like, her singing and stuff like that. And, you know, Ruby just, like, gets really frank with her mom, says, like, when I was born, like, did you want me to be deaf? And it's like, ooh, that's a tough question.
Yeah,
you know, and the mom was honest, and she said, I did hope that you were deaf, because I knew that that would be something we could connect on. And the mom says, she's like, look, I'm not close with my mother because this was something that, like, separated us, you know? So it was nice that they had that moment to like, kind of say, like, just be honest about some of the struggles that they've had.
Mm-hmm. I still highly recommend it, even though it is, like, a familiar story, a predictable one. It is in a, like, presented in a different way, though, which makes it worthwhile to me. So, so definitely highly recommend streaming on Apple Plus, as we mentioned before.
Yeah, go check it out. Okay, here is our review on Belfast, one of our other Best Picture nominees. Belfast was written and directed by Kenneth Branagh, loosely based on his childhood growing up in Belfast.
Yeah, I mean,
from what we know,
the little bit I looked into it, like, I think it's pretty based on it. From what I guess, I don't know, like, if he had a brother or, like, how much of it I guess is similar, but, like, I mean, he was a kid when this was going on.
Yes,
so
yes. Mm-hmm. So so we have Jude Hill is kind of our main character, Buddy. He's, I don't know, how old do you think he is?
9. I think Kenneth Branagh was 9 or 10 when he went through this. So
okay.
I'm not good. Like, I'm only good at judging the age of however old our son is. Right. I can nail how old, like, that kid is 1.5. I'll get that right.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so he's about 9 years old. He's really one of the few characters that has like a name.
Yeah, it's like
especially Pa, if you look at his his family, we just know them as Ma and Pa and
Pop.
So Jamie Dornan plays his dad. Catriona Balfe plays his mother. Dame Judi Dench plays his grandmother. And I gotta pronounce this one.
Siren?
Sure. Kieran. I'm gonna say C's usually make a K sound. Kieran Hines plays his grandfather.
Which he's like arguably like the best part of the movie. So we should probably get his name right. Dame Judi Dench apparently has Irish heritage though, because I just went, she's British. What are we doing here? Even though it's like not that big a deal, probably. Yeah. But apparently she does have some Irish background.
Yes. Jamie Dornan was born in Belfast. Which, so that was cool.
I'm going to sound very, he's known for what, musician? I didn't know Jamie Dornan was like a person of note.
He's in the 50 Shades movies.
Oh, God.
He's the main character in that.
Cool. All right.
Because Charlie Hunnam turned it
down. You know what? I'm proud of myself for not knowing that.
I can't even think of the main character's name from 50 Shades of Grey.
Is his name Grey?
Yeah, Grey. Christian Grey? I think that's what it is. Cool. I don't know. I guess I'm proud for not knowing that.
Yeah. Grey. And I think the mom, I looked, she was in Ford vs. Ferrari. She was Christian Bale's wife.
Oh, was she? Yes. Very cool. She did look familiar to me, but I never looked into what else she had done. So very cool. So that's our cast. Smaller cast. Sorry, I'm just trying to find budget.
Nailed that.
Budget for this movie was $25 million, whopping $25 million. It's not that much.
No, it's not.
If we take a look at the box office, gross worldwide currently is just over $37 million. So
yeah, which
pretty good.
No, I mean, but like, so the general rule, it's not 100%. The general rule is like double the budget, and that's what it needs to make to break even because of marketing.
Okay, gotcha.
So it's like, it isn't like, you know, not always the case, but it's the general rule of the industry. So as it stands right now, this lost money, which is it's a good movie. We'll get into it. It just sucks, I guess, that like a movie that doesn't cost that much. I know like COVID, like we're still in the pandemic. People aren't necessarily going to theaters, but I always hate seeing like a movie like this not perform too well at the theater. But at the same time, it's about an Irish family in the 60s. So it isn't the most like appealing movie for people to go see. But mm-hmm. I feel like if a movie like this was released 20 years ago or something, it would have like killed at the box office. But in this, like in the day and age of, you need a $200 million superhero movie, or like a, you know, this is kind of in the budget of an indie movie, which is also why this sucks. But like, or you need like a $10 million indie movie to do anything at the box office to make money. Like, it sucks seeing a movie like this not perform well.
Yeah.
So there's my little rant.
Yeah, well, that's good.
But anyway, it is well received. Box office doesn't matter to the award ceremony. So it was nominated for 6 Golden Globes. All of these would be in the dramatic category if it split. So Best Picture it was nominated for but lost. Director it was nominated for but lost. It won for screenplay, which is not split between adapted or original. It's just screenplay, and it won that. It's nominated for supporting... it was actually 8 nominations. I misread this. It had 2 supporting actor nominations in Hines and Dornan. And then the mom, Belfie, was nominated for supporting actress, and it was nominated for original song.
Oh, that's right.
Van Morrison.
Yeah. So much Van Morrison here, which we learned he's from
Belfast. Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit. So the SAGs, it had two nominations, not cast, which is like their version of Best Picture. It lost to Coda, and Supporting Actress, which was the mom, Belfie, and lost that. So it was just two nominations. It was nominated for a bunch of BAFTAs, which makes sense. And then the Academy Awards, it's nominated for seven Academy Awards. Obviously don't know the outcome yet, but it's nominated for Picture, Director, Supporting Actor, and Hines. No surprise there, but a little bit of a surprise, Supporting Actress for Dench, even though Belfie was getting all the nominees before this. They went, Judi Dench. Screenplay, I assume, I should have looked this up. Original screenplay, I assume. Song, and then sound.
Oh, okay.
So those are the nominations. And IMDb, we'll go through some scores here. I'll actually start with Rotten Tomatoes. It's right now a certified 87% for the critics, 92% for the audience. The critics' consensus is a deeply personal project for writer-director Kenneth Branagh. Belfast transcends its narrative deficits with powerful performances and directorial craft. On IMDb, it is a 7.3, and then the Metacritic score is a 75. That is where we're sitting with Belfast. I guess if I had to compare, if you want a movie to compare it to see if you'd like it or not, if you haven't seen it, it's like Roma for Alfonso Cuarón. Like,
that is a good comparison, actually.
They're
both even shot in black and white.
Yeah, and this is like the Irish upbringing, but Roma was in Mexico, this is in Ireland, but it's a passion project for the director based on their childhood. So it's, if you really liked Roma, I think you'd really like this. It's only like an hour and a half long, too.
So. Yeah, it's very short.
So
you could watch Batman, or you could watch this twice in the time it would take you to watch the Batman.
Exactly. What would you do? Would you watch this twice, or would you watch the Batman once?
Probably watch Batman once.
There you go. I agree. This is what I'm saying. So general non-spoilery, I guess, thoughts. It is, I mentioned it, it's like Roma, you can tell, it's a very personal passion project for Kenneth Branagh. It isn't like the traditional, at least in my mind, I don't view it as a traditional, like, oh, it's a movie with like a beginning, climax, and end. There is something that happens that you could maybe consider as the climax of the movie, but it's like, it's just the story of this family over a period of time. Mm-hmm. Like there's through the eyes of this kid. So I guess it's like Roma mixed in with maybe like To Kill a Mockingbird or something, since it's kind of from the point of view of a child. But I thought it was good. I don't know. Passion projects are tough for me, cause it's like, I'm not making the personal connection. Like clearly the director is. Maybe that's why we didn't love Roma as much as like maybe critics did. But I feel like that's something that maybe resonate, like it either resonates with you or it doesn't. And like it did for the most part with me, but it didn't make me like love the movie. I can definitely see how some people it's like more on the artsy kind of side of movie. So I can see how someone might watch this and be like, it was all right. You know what I mean? It isn't like for the general populace movie goer, I guess, which is maybe why I didn't do great at the box office. But it's still a good movie. But yeah, the acting is phenomenal. I think this is Jude Hill's first movie.
It is, yep.
Said introducing, so I assumed it was.
Yep.
He's great. He's like,
he's really good.
Like,
he's
especially just as
such
a
cute kid. He's so cute.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he did like a really good job.
Yeah. So I mean, he's like the one who's on screen like 90% of the time. So it's just tough to be in that position. But to be a kid, like, I think he nailed it. Jamie Dornan's in it. Like, I don't want to say not a lot, but like, he isn't in the movie.
The mom's just in it more.
Yeah.
For sure.
So like, she's really good. Dornan has a couple moments of like, you know, oh, like that was a good delivery of that like line or whatever you want to say. But like, he just isn't in it a ton. The grandparents are those like funny, loving grandparents, and they're great. Karen Hines is like probably the best part of the movie, probably because like he does add a lot of humor. So it's nice having humor thrown into a serious story like this. So maybe that's why I like him so much.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. And if any of this gets too into spoilers, we can cover later, but I like what stood out the most to you, because I didn't think, like, he didn't catch my eye at all. And when I looked through to see, like, oh, what is this nominated for? I'm like, oh, the grandpa got nominated? Okay. Like, it was a surprise to me.
I guess I just, like, I thought he was good because maybe it's because he was funny. So it, like, offset the seriousness of the movie. So it made him stand out a little bit more. He kind of gave him like life lessons throughout the movie, which is always like kind of heartwarming and nice to see. He gets, you know, not too spoiler, like he gets sick. So I think award ceremonies kind of like giving nominations to people who kind of
the character like develops through this.
Yeah, and like this is going to sound random and weird. I felt like in all the 90s, like every best supporting actor winner died in their movie. And I'm just like, does the Academy like it when a character dies? And I'm not saying he does or doesn't in this movie, but like he gets sick at one point. So I don't know. He was just heartwarming. He's like the, like, because Jamie Dornan isn't there a lot, he's kind of like the father figure, funny guy. So it's like, I don't know, a combination of that stuff, I think, is why he's getting a lot of love.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we'll talk through the movie really quick. So more of the, or well, nope, quickly. Score, I gave it an 8.8.
Okay.
So I still think it was great. You know, a great movie. It just, again, isn't breaking that like 9.0 and higher barrier for me. So.
Yeah, I gave this a 7.8, which I feel like it's one of those movies that, like, the more I talk about it, the more I think about it, like, I kind of enjoy it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be really interesting to sit down and watch this in a few years and see if, you know, if I feel anything different about it. I think you nailed it perfectly when you said, like, when it's a passion project from, like, the writer, director, whoever, and it's not something that we know a lot about or can connect on like a firsthand level, it doesn't like resonate the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's one of those things where I'm like, I feel like if I knew more about what was going on in Ireland at the time, I feel like, and it's not like they didn't explain what was going on, but I'm just like, I feel like if I knew a little bit more about it, I might understand more about like what the kid was dealing with, what the mom's dealing with, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So
that's right. Like I looked into it a little bit after seeing this movie, because like they talk about like the issues that are going on. Yeah. So
like I did appreciate like the final like title card was like, for those who stayed, for those who left, for those who died. And I was like, oh, that's like this is like a tribute to his hometown, and that's really special. So
no, for sure.
I'm definitely not trying to take anything away from that. But just something that doesn't resonate as much with me.
Yep, totally fair. That's like, that's passion projects. Like we said, so
I don't spoil things. Name me one thing that I've actually spoiled.
All right, we'll talk through the movie really quick. So it starts out in color, like modern day Belfast, and then transition to flashback, and the rest, basically the rest of the movie is in black and white. It's 1969 in Belfast. It's kind of one of those little neighborhoods where all the kids just play in like this one alley. Like they go to this alley and like all the kids are just playing there. And when a mom is yelling for one to come home, they all go, oh, buddy, mom wants you. So it's like this little like community, like your own personal daycare is like, oh, all the kids just go play in that alley. Boney's going back home. A riot breaks out. So this is like the time known as the Troubles. Like I looked into it. This is like when the Troubles started in Ireland. And the movie kind of, like, they don't, like you said, they don't dive into exactly what it is. The movie kind of presents it as, like, a religious difference. But apparently that's not necessarily the case. It was just most Protestants like side, like leaned this way, and then most Catholics leaned the other way. And what that lean was Northern Ireland either staying or leaving the in the UK, because like Ireland was separate from the UK, but Northern Ireland still is and was like part of the UK. So that was like where the argument was, or like the which side of the fence you were on. Mm-hmm. But then they go to church, which the sweatiest priest in the world officiating there.
Yep.
And Jamie Dornan, the dad, like he's not in it a lot because he works in London. Like he can't get work in Belfast, so he spends most of his time in London, rarely gets to visit, but like does throughout points of the movie, obviously. So it's the mom raising the two kids. And it's basically like just this kind of adventures of this kid. He gets roped into robbing a convenience store at one point. But it's like kind of just, that's why I kind of said To Kill a Mockingbird. It's just like the adventures of these kids for the most part, with like this kind of religious riot backdrop going on. And like whenever dad comes to visit, he gets talked to by the neighbors by like, oh, you need to help us, you need to do this, you need to do that. They go and see Gran and Granny a lot, and he gets like that fatherly advice from him, you know, and they're always kind of funny together. And then the like crux of the movie, or the conflict of the movie, is the dad gets a job offer to be a manager, but in London, like the company would put them up in a house and they'd have the opportunity to buy it when they were done, you know, for a period of time. So that's like they need to make a decision by like Christmas or Easter or something like that. So, and the mom doesn't want to leave because she's like, this is where they were born and raised. Like, he can go play in that alley and it's fine. Like, well, we don't know anyone in London. They're going to look at us funny. We're going to talk differently.
Sound weird. Yeah.
So, and then grandpa gets sick at one point and like ends up in the hospital. He does end up dying. And they, you know, they have a wake or a funeral where, you know, a bunch of people come in and, you know, talk to the family, and they decide there's the like what I said might be considered the climax of the movie is there's this another big riot, but Buddy gets looped into joining, and they attack this convenience store, and Buddy like steals, was it bleach or laundry detergent?
Washing powder. Yep, laundry detergent.
And brings it home. And the mom's like, no, we got, like, she makes him return it immediately, which was crazy in my mind. Like, okay, maybe let's not go back to the riot and return it. Maybe do it, like, the next morning or something like that. Mm-hmm. But they do it in that moment and get caught up in, like a bigger, like the biggest in the movie, at least, like riot and police confrontation. And after that, that's when the mom decides, oh, okay, no, like we should move to London. So the movie ends with them moving to London and ends with like grandma Judi Dench is like, she wanted them to go. So it like ends with her seeing them leave on the bus and her smiling. And then it ends with like the title card you mentioned, like it's back in color and it's, you know, for the ones who stayed, the ones who left, and ones who died, like you mentioned. So it takes place over like maybe a year.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yep. But yeah, I mean, like I said, that was good. Learning got me to go Google stuff and learn more right, about it, yeah. Which is always a good thing. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was funny a couple parts. So he's got a crush on a classmate. Mm-hmm. And I thought we both thought it was funny. Like, their seating arrangement is based on how well they do. And
so yeah, the kids who do the best, like on the test, get to sit closest to the front, and the kids who like did the worst on the test get sat in the back. I'm like, shouldn't that be the other way around?
Yeah.
Don't the kids who are not performing well need more help? Maybe they should be closer to the teacher.
Reward the good ones, make them want to learn. Yeah. So yeah, and at one point he wants to sit next to her, so he keeps doing better, but he like passes her, yeah. And so she gets bumped back when he gets moved up. So that was kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, in a good moment too. So like he's working on his math homework, and his grandpa's there, and he's like, oh, he's like, I want to do better so I can sit next to this girl in my class. And he's like, well, you gotta play the system. Write your numbers messy so you're not sure. Ooh, is that a 1 or is that a 7? give yourself more options, like more chances for a correct answer. He's like, isn't that, the kid's like, isn't that cheating? And he's like, no.
No, it's not cheating. That's probably my favorite scene of the movie was that. Because I'm just like, I've done that. Like, I've definitely done that before. I love hearing him say it.
Have you seen those things where it's like, you can write the word like true and false. Like you can write like each letter a certain way. So if you kind of look at it, kind of looks like it says true, but it also kind of looks like it says
false. Hell yeah. False. I love that. It's all about beating the system. Like, let's get it done. So no, yeah, that was like my favorite. He's like, let me just make that 7, give a little bit of a tail, or maybe that 1 have a little bit of a tail. So maybe it's a 7. I don't know. I love that. I thought that was hilarious. But yeah, something you touched on earlier, a lot of this cast and crew from Belfast. Obviously, writer-director Kenneth Branagh is. I think Kieran Hines was too, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Let me try and look it up here and I can confirm.
But Van Morrison is. So he did, 10 songs on this soundtrack? Like, because we did watch this with subtitles on. So whenever a song came on, it would be like, blah, 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 by Van Morrison. After like the 5th one, we're just like, did he do this entire soundtrack?
Yeah, you're right. No, Kenneth Branagh, Jamie Dornan, the grandfather, Kieran Hines, and then Josie Walker, who plays their aunt. All 4 of them were born in Belfast.
So that's always kind of cool.
And Van Morrison was born there as well.
Yeah. So that's always, you know, kind of cool. You just have, like, when you have the cast from the area that you're making it on, so.
Mm-hmm. I appreciated the artistic qualities of the movie, like the choices they made with the cinematography. There were a few, it's really cool, like, angles that they did with things. Like, you mentioned the grandfather when he's sick in the hospital, and they show... is it Buddy or Billy?
Buddy.
They show Buddy and his dad like on either side of like grandfather's bed in the hospital, but they show it from like outside the hospital window. Mm-hmm. And like, so you like, you don't get to see their faces. You just kind of hear them talking and stuff. And I liked some of those aspects where like, there's this one corner in their house where it's like this little kitchen table, little kitchen. And then they have this like little outdoor like patio, more or less, which is where their toilet is. They talk about that as a thing in London. You won't have to like use the bathroom outside.
Nothing wrong with an outdoor toilet, son.
But like, just like that corner there ends up being like a perfect like hiding spot for Buddy in terms of like just eavesdropping on what his parents are saying. And so like, I think just like that angle there, I always thought like they're just always really good like camera shots when they're kind of like around that spot. So I like that thing. And then I think one of the most interesting things, because you mentioned that it's in color at the very beginning, the rest of the movie is all in black and white, except when they go see Christmas Carol. When they go see, is it the Christmas Carol? I'm pretty sure it is.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang's in color,
too. Oh, yes. That was the other one.
But it might have been another one,
too. Yeah, that's right, because the kid likes going to see like movies at the theater. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, oh, Dad's in town. Let's you know, go see Chitty Chitty Bang Bangs. Yeah, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang Bangs in color. And then when they take Grandma to go see A Christmas Carol, I don't remember if they show the stage or not, but when he's like sitting next to Grandma and talking to her, you can see the reflection off her glasses, and that's in color. I'm like, I like that the art that they're seeing is like, that's the only thing that's in color.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a great point.
I love those like metaphors and like artistic decisions that are made to like stand out like that.
And I think Kenneth Branagh is a great director and has been for a while. He did a bunch of Shakespeare stuff in the late 80s, early 90s that got him a bunch of Oscar nominations, and then he hasn't done he's directed but nothing award worthy in a while. He did the first Thor. He's doing Death on the Nile and the Murder on the Orient Express. Like, he's done stuff.
Yeah.
But then he's done some shit, too. Like, I think he did Artemis Fowl.
Didn't turn out well.
No,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, it was nice seeing him do this. And he's getting...
He did the first Thor movie.
That
was one that I'm like, I feel like there's, like, a big movie that I was thinking of. Yeah, Thor.
Yep. So it's nice seeing him do this, because it's, I mean, obviously it's very personal, but like you said, the directing and camera work is great. So
yeah,
all the praise he's getting is definitely worthwhile. I hope he I hope he wins something. Obviously, I think it's up for, like, screenplay might be the best bet for it, just because directing, I feel like, is fairly locked up with Power of the Dog, but there's always surprises, so, you know, we'll see what happens, I guess. But yeah, it's nice seeing him do it, like, a award-worthy movie again, I guess is the point.
For sure.
And it's not streaming anywhere. We had to buy or rent it on Amazon. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, currently as it stands, that's what you'll have to do for this one. But
yeah. My parents were able to see it in theaters, but that was, like, right when it was first released. So
sure.
I know sometimes in Madison, like, we've got a specialty theater that does more indie type stuff. So maybe you may have a theater near you that's sure. showing it. Yeah, otherwise we did find it on Amazon. I do have a few other notes that I wanted to bring up as far as, like, scenes from the movie. You know, we talked about how the dad is not around a lot. It's usually one of those things, like, he's home only on the weekends, mm-hmm. and pretty soon it's, like, every other weekend, you know, and I think once they're forced to make that decision of, okay, do we stay here or do we move to England? And, you know, the mom and dad have gone back and forth and reasons to do it or not. And I think the dad finally sees, like, what she's been dealing with, not just, like, with the kids and family members, but just, like, the political stuff that's been going on that he's kind of removed from because he's not there seeing it day to day. And he just stops her and he's like, you raised these boys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I take no credit for the men they're becoming. Like, you have done this. You've done a great job with them. And I appreciate that moment because I think she felt seen and felt understood in those moments, especially because she was much more in favor of staying in Belfast.
Oh, yeah. Did not want to
leave. Did not want to go. And, you know, I think they were kind of at odds with each other in terms of, like which decision made sense. And, you know, I'm not sure they got any closer to making a decision in that moment, but I think it was, like, I'm sure she appreciated what he said.
Mm-hmm. Like, admitting it. Like,
yeah.
Finally having him, like, admit it or, like, yeah, just to get the praise for it, I guess.
Yep. And especially, like, the money troubles and stuff that they've had, and she's been dealing with the bills and stuff that they've been getting, and she's been having to handle that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was a good moment between them. And I think my favorite moment between them, though, was at the grandfather's celebration of life. I had to ask him, I'm like, where are we right now? And you're like, I'm pretty sure this is, like, the grandfather's, like, celebration of life. I'm like, okay, because this feels like it's a wedding or something. People are singing, having a great time. Everyone's smiling. But
yeah, I don't know that for sure, but I just assumed it because it was right after his wake in their house.
Yeah, right after it. But, you know, Jamie Dornan just gets up to the microphone on stage and starts singing Everlasting Love, and the mom's just dancing and everyone's just, you know, like, feeling good, like, actually mm-hmm. celebrating life instead of, you know, checking in and out with, here's something I should have looked up. What are the people who are, like, checking the kids in and out whenever they, like, leave the neighborhood and come back, you know, like, sitting at, like, the barbed wires and being like, oh, okay, like, you're coming in. You know, like, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, you're walking past all these, like, security checkpoints and stuff just to go about your everyday life. Yeah. And
crazy to think about.
Your grandfather dies and now we're singing and having a good time. And it was, yeah, I don't know. It was fun seeing them have fun.
Yeah. Like, a moment, yeah, where everyone's having a good time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, very... very true. Do you think so? Who do you think was there? So Judi Dench got the Oscar nomination. Like, do you think the mom was better?
Yeah, I think the mom was better.
I think so too. Yeah. I don't know if the Academy just went, oh, it's Judi Dench. Like, we got to give it to Judi Dench.
I know.
But I definitely thought the mom was better. It was more emotional, at least.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So Yeah, I don't know. I was kind of like not disappointed. Like Judi Dench is great, and you know she's gotten how many nominations and wins and all that. She's got a couple funny lines in the movie too. But it was, the mom was just so good.
Yeah, the mom was just was really good, and she was. She's just a strong character, and she's vulnerable, and yeah, I really liked her. It was funny seeing, I pointed this out, it was funny seeing Judi Dench, like, in, because she always looks, like, just very prim and proper, and she's always got her just nice little pixie cut going on, but in this, she had a little bit of a longer, like, page boy haircut with, like, the big glasses, and, like, sitting there with her skirt right at her knees but her legs apart just a little bit. I'm like, she is that like stereotypical grandmother right now. And it was funny just seeing her a little bit more like approachable in a way instead of just
I'm the queen.
I'm Dame Judi Dench.
I'm playing the queen in a billion movies all the time because I'm proper.
Yeah. So it was just nice seeing her as like just a typical Irish grandmother. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Also, I think theory, maybe there's science behind this, but I don't know. Black and white movies bring out more, like, they show your wrinkles. She's very wrinkly. She's a very wrinkly person. Mm-hmm. I think black and white movies really push that.
She did. Well, she did look wrinklier than normal. But yeah, at first I was like, that's not Judi Dench, right? Is it? Like, I had to look at her a few times before I was like, okay, yeah, that's her.
Mm-hmm.
So even just having like a different hairstyle and glasses, I was like, what is this disguise?
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked her, but the mother was better.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if we're talking actor nominations.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, check it. You'll have to rent it as of now, rent or buy it on streaming, but I think it's, you know, I think it's worth checking. It's a shorter movie. If you liked like a Roma or something like that, I think for sure check it out. I've got
if you didn't like Roma, I fucking hated Roma. I enjoyed this.
Yeah.
I get what you're going for.
Yep.
But even if you didn't like it, this is
good. Also, it's March, it's Irish Heritage Month, so support an Irish movie. Oh,
there you go.
So that's the show today. Make sure to follow us on social media at Oscar Real Pod on Twitter, on the Instagram, or on the line, Exchangegram. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening. If you're on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, I guess it's called these days. When was the last time it was called iTunes? I don't know why I said that. But on Apple Podcasts.
You freaking millennial. You and your iTunes.
You calm down, you boomer at heart, you. leave us a review and a rating. Help us out. The more you listen, the more you review, the higher we climb in the charts. And it's almost nothing on your end. You just click that five-star button, and it helps us out immensely. Also, check out my YouTube channel. I've been posting. I'm going to post like snippets of reviews and stuff on there. To check out too. So yeah, from Matt and Haley, this has been the Oscar Real Movie Podcast.